Hi, this is Anne Merchant, and welcome to The Sounds of Science, the podcast brought to you by the National Academy of Sciences, the National Academy of Engineering, the Institute of Medicine, and the National Research Council, collectively known as the National Academies. This is the season of healthcare reform, and as the debate continues in Washington, experts around the country have been very busy trying to prepare information and insights that will be useful. In the winter 2010 edition of Issues in Science and Technology, two representatives of the business community, Arnold Milstein and Helen Darling, penned an article that outlines some of their ideas for how the United States can improve its healthcare system. Milstein is medical director of the Pacific Business Group on Health in San Francisco and chief physician at Mercer Health and Benefits. Darling is president of the National Business Group on Health in Washington, D.C. In preparing the article, Milstein and Darling spoke with a wide range of experts from the healthcare system, including former insurance company executives, representatives of industry that purchase healthcare, heads of medical schools, clinic directors, and even medical researchers. Their goal was to look not at how we pay for healthcare, but how we spend that money once we have it. How do we get the most value for what we're spending? And how should we organize healthcare? In the United States, the amount of money spent on healthcare by all sources, including government, private employers, and individuals, is approximately $7,500 a year per person. In other advanced industrial nations, such as Germany, the bill is roughly one-third less. But scores on healthcare quality measures in the United States are not generally higher than in other wealthy countries, and actually compare poorly on multiple measures. Nor is higher spending buying greater user satisfaction. Chronically ill patients in the United States, who are in most frequent need of care, are generally less satisfied with their care than their counterparts in other wealthy countries. But this picture can be changed. Fixing the situation will require the U.S. healthcare industry to more rapidly develop and adopt innovations that improve value without lowering quality of care or slowing biomedical progress. In essence, the authors argue that it must become a learning healthcare system. To find out more about the ideas and recommendations found in the article, we talked to Editor-in-Chief of Issues in Science and Technology, Kevin Finneran. Finneran explains just what Milstein and Darling mean when they talk about a learning healthcare system.
Well, that's curious. I mean, a learning healthcare system is really trying to get healthcare to operate the way most functions in our society and a private economy operate, in which is you get feedback, you learn from your mistakes, you study your inputs and outputs, and you try to improve your performance over that. You learn to manufacture better, you learn to deliver better banking services, whatever it happens to be. But what's curious about our healthcare system is how little we know about what goes on inside the system, how little we know about the comparative effectiveness of treatments, and not just the treatment itself, but the way in which it's delivered, the follow-up with patients, whether they follow through on their instructions. There are all these types of things which most companies are doing all the time, and in a large enough scale that they can compare it to their competitors and improve. Whereas the healthcare system, we often know very little about how we spend our money, which hospitals are doing a better job with which types of treatment.
Milstein and Darling identify five broad categories of waste in the current healthcare system. In the United States, we provide services that are unlikely to be helpful, and we oftentimes deliver them in inefficient ways. We also charge non-competitive prices for services and products. Everyone is probably familiar with looking at their hospital bill and finding out that the small Band-Aid they'd put on cost $18. The U.S. healthcare system also incurs excess administrative costs due to the complex financing system with private insurers, each doing things just a little bit differently. Lastly, a common complaint is that we don't do enough prevention because nobody is properly paid or given an incentive to do prevention. But there are a number of tools available to trim waste. In particular, the implementation of electronic health records for patients has some of the biggest potential to make the healthcare system more efficient. Finneran explains.
In in the idea of improving effectiveness, a computerized medical record system would allow us to study the results. If we had a common system, we could look at what people were doing, what types of treatments they were providing, what the results were after 6 months, a year. And a lot of these records could be studied by taking out the identifiers so that people's medical records would still be kept private. But it would allow us to collect a tremendous amount of information about how we are doing things now, which we simply don't understand. And then knowing that would allow us to do things better.
Related to the creation of electronic health records, and helped by that, are a number of changes that would fall under a systems engineering approach to the healthcare system. Again, Kevin Finneran.
This is what we commonly see happening throughout industry in the United States. This is how we increase productivity. We look at the way we do things. During the 1980s and 1990s, we saw it in the automobile industry, the Toyota system of production. Was less expensive and produced more reliable cars. U.S. auto manufacturers really learned from this. They studied that system and now they've improved. So the gap between the Japanese and the U.S. auto manufacturers has pretty much closed, and in some categories U.S. manufacturers are often better. So that we can learn to do this. Now, in healthcare, we simply haven't done that. We haven't taken those lessons about delivering services. You know, who should provide the service? Where they should provide it? How someone should be taken through a hospital? And again, if all of this was computerized, obviously a lot of things would be made easier. But also just looking at it as a systems problem. We always think of doctors as independent operators. Even in hospitals, they're thought of independently. But hospitals are systems for providing care, and they can be made to work a lot more efficiently.
Finally, one of the ways to achieve the greatest cost reduction is to implement what the authors of the article call bundled payments. Today, we're accustomed to going to many different and disconnected specialists for different services. You may have to go across town to get a lab test, and then maybe a different specialist will interpret the results. And you pay for each service separately. Under that system, there's no incentive for the individual providers to reduce the costs of their services. But under a bundled payment system, you would have your services provided by a group. You might go in and you have one lead doctor, but they work in concert with a team of other specialists to provide the care. By putting the entire treatment process under the responsibility of a single group of providers, it creates the incentive for them to make their services more cost-efficient. But if we are to coordinate the standardization of payer methods through the use of bundled payments, and if we are to standardize measurements of comparative performance of treatments through the use of electronic health records, we will need strong public-private partnerships. Finneran describes the unique mix of public and private health care we currently have in the United States and the need for each of these to work with one another.
The public-private breakdown of the U.S. healthcare systems is one of the great curiosities about it. During the healthcare debate, people were constantly screaming that they did not want a system that was like Canada's system, or they did not want a system that was like England's. But when you look at the healthcare system, if you look at the Veterans Administration, the Veterans Administration has government-employed doctors and government-funded care. That's just like Britain's National Health Service. When you look at the Medicare system, it's a social program that the funding is done through the government, but the services are provided by private physicians and doctors and so on. That is the Canadian healthcare system. That's how they work. It's government insurance, but private healthcare system providers and so on. And then we have the system for private care, where you get your health insurance generally through your employer, and then services are provided by private physicians and hospitals. And that's a system like Germany's or Japan's. But what's interesting is the United States has all three of the major systems for providing health care. You know, all public, public-private mix, all private. So it's clear that if we're going to do anything with this system, we have to get these to work together. We don't want separate systems. Also, in order to learn what's going on, we need to be sharing information among these systems. And also, people are going to move through all three of these systems, so we need to have them be coordinated.
One of the big problems we have in the U.S. healthcare debate is that people tend to fixate on small pieces of the healthcare system. Milstein and Darling feel that this stands in the way of taking a larger view and doing some of the fundamental baseline things that will improve the performance of the healthcare system, no matter how we finance it, who we decide to include, or which plan we decide to tax. All of these things could be improved if we could start with agreement to take a hard look at the value of healthcare we currently provide and its cost-effectiveness. My name is Anne Merchant, and you've been listening to The Sounds of Science, the podcast brought to you by the National Academies, advisors to the nation on science, engineering, and medicine. Be sure to visit us at our website at nationalacademies.org, where we have more than 3,000 books and publications available full text to read free online.